Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome to You Split It. I'm Aaron Mette.
And I'm Katie Halper.
And this is the show. This is the interview show, which I've never kicked off before. So, you know,
Right. Yeah, that
was fun.
Woo! I think that was good. Yeah. How'd it feel? I saw you getting into character. You really had to
yourself. Wow, I did. Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's a start of a new era. We just kicked off a new era. We have a great show for you today with Margaret Kimberly of Black Agenda Report. She's also the author of this great book, Prejudential, Black America and the Presidents. And it's a perfect way to celebrate Black History Month by going over how terrible and racist all presidents of the United States were, more or less. So we're really excited about that.
Really excited to talk to Margaret. Black Agenda Report is a great news source. It's been consistently proven right over the years. Like back when it was really fashionable for everyone to like worship Obama and think he was the second coming, Black Agenda Report under Glenn Ford, the late Glenn Ford, was calling bullshit on that. And everything they said about Obama proved to be exactly right. And on that and many other issues. So very excited to speak to Margaret here, what she has to say.
Yeah. So, you know what we do, though, every show?
What's that?
The four basic food groups.
Oh, the four basic food groups, of course. Yes.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
And so should we just get into it?
Let's do it.
Let's just do it. What do you got? Aaron, you got Democrats suck.
I got Democrats suck, and there's always so many good choices. But remember when Joe Biden ran on promising free community college? Mm-hmm. Remember that? That one? Well, guess what, Katie? You're never going to believe it.
What?
The Democrats.
Free community college?
The Democrats are not going to do free community college. Let's play the clip and then get into it.
Joe has also had to make compromises. Congress hasn't passed the Build Back Better legislation yet. And free community college is no longer part of that package. We knew that this wasn't going to be easy. Joe always said that. Still, like you, I was disappointed.
That, of course, was Jill Biden, the first lady, delivering the news that yet another Biden campaign promise is not going to be fulfilled. And so, yeah, the playbook now is to blame everything on Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema. But, I mean, look, how many times can we hear that? How many times can we hear the same excuse?
But Aaron, the important part is her heart, her thoughts and prayers are with the American people because she too is disappointed.
She's very disappointed, yeah. But you know, Jill's in an awkward position where she sometimes has to be honest about who her husband really is.
Right.
And her delivering the news that this major campaign promise was not going to be fulfilled reminded me of the time on the campaign trail when she admitted about Joe that his healthcare platform sucks.
Oh, this is a great line.
Let's go to that clip.
I know that not all of you are committed to my husband. And I respect that. Your candidate might be better on, I don't know, healthcare than Joe is. But you've got to look at who's going to win this election. And maybe you have to swallow a little bit and say, okay, I sort of personally like so-and-so better. But your bottom line has to be that we have to beat Trump.
So that was during the primaries, and that was Jill Biden saying that, I know that your candidate might be better than my husband in valuing human life.
Right.
By having a better health care plan. But you got to think about who's going to win.
Yeah, you just got to swallow it. That was when, I mean, I think she made history as the first would-be first lady encouraging people, voters, to swallow. I mean, I'm sorry. Can't help it. She said it, not me.
Yeah. So anyway, RIP to another Democratic campaign promise.
And you know what, though? I think we're giving Joe a little bit of a hard time. He did, to be fair, he did promise that nothing would fundamentally change. Although he made that promise behind closed doors in front of donors. But that is probably the most honest we've heard Joe, maybe historically, atypically honest moment from Joe Biden.
Promises made, promises kept.
Yeah, exactly. He should just run on that promise, yeah. Honestly.
I promised that nothing would fundamentally change, and I kept that promise.
Yeah, he did. So thank you, Joe. Promises kept. So let's move to Republicans suck. And this one is really interesting because viewers and listeners may remember that last week we went over a terrible, and isn't that a terrible story, involving a man injecting drugs into his penis. And we actually ended that chat talking about safe injection sites in both senses of the word. So this is a perfect clip to follow that up with. Here's Senator John Kennedy reacting to the Biden administration's $30 million grant aimed at safe drug use and to the fact that the Department of Justice is weighing drug injection sites nationwide.
Bill, there almost aren't words in English. The Biden administration just keep on rocking it in the free world. I mean, every single day reality calls and the Biden administration just hangs up. I don't think when moms and dads lie down at night in America and can't sleep, they're worried about clean injection sites and sterile crack pipes. The issue, Mr. President, is crime. The issue, Mr. President, is how to stop it, not how to encourage it. Now, why has crime gone up? I know it's complicated, but I'll tell you a big reason. Wokeism now runs in the Democratic family. It practically gallops. And most, not all, but most of our large urban areas are run by woke Democrats. And wokers believe that the criminal is a victim. Wokers believe that when a criminal commits a crime, it's not the criminal's fault. It's the fault of an unfair world. And wokers believe that punishment and prisons and cops just make things worse. And the American people don't believe that. And unless you have the IQ of a garden pest, you know you cannot order a civilized society based on that worldview. And that's the problem that we have.
Senator, obviously, as you said, it's a complex issue. And I don't have a loved one in my life that has one of these addictions. And the Just Say No campaign and the fried egg as your brain really worked on me. And I wonder, though, if we look at this, and Health and Human Services says they have this harm reduction plan. These are the details. They want to expand use of fentanyl testing strips, comprehensive HIV services, and a syringe program. Maybe that really helps. Widen access to opioid overdose reversal treatments and a stop overdose campaign, which I guess was a public service announcement. But we just had a story that said 100,000 people died of overdoses last year. And I understand if you're on the street, there's one thing, but we also talked to a lot of people where this fentanyl is coming across the border from China to Mexico into the United States. And we had one couple who lost their son on his first experiment. He was killed. And these injection sites, one, they're a huge problem for the neighborhoods, but it doesn't do anything to address that problem of the fentanyl coming across the border, sir.
No, it doesn't. And look, I've passed bills dealing with opioid abuse. And we're all concerned about the addiction problem. But you want to hit the addiction problem in America a hard lick? Seal the border. Right now, President Biden's policy is this.
Here's the way we're going to kick, what was it? Kick it a hard lick? I love his turns of phrase, but you want to kick it a hard lick. Here's how you treat addiction. Close the border.
The fact that she said that the Nancy Reagan Just Say No fried egg ads had an effect on her or worked for her,
right,
is just so revealing. I mean, that's at a time when you had an epidemic in the country of drugs. And the answer was basically to run these stupid Just Say No campaigns and to increase funding for police. And by the way, meanwhile, to aid the Contras who were actually shipping cocaine into the country with the CIA's knowledge, if not their cooperation. And now they're talking about saying, is closing the borders, if that would have any impact whatsoever. First of all, I mean, you just can't close the border. People will find a way to get in. And the point is, no matter, you know, no matter how draconian you are at the border, the addiction is still there. If you're addicted, you will still find a way to feed your addiction.
Right.
And these people don't want to talk about that because they don't have any compassion for people who are exactly, in that position.
I like the way Dana Perino, who was a George Bush spokeswoman, says like, oh, it is a complex issue, as if he granted any complexity or nuance to it whatsoever. He didn't at all. He was basically just vilifying this. And this, by the way, this comes in response to the Biden administration's $30 million grant aimed at safe drug use. But let's keep watching the rest of this clip.
Or a German machinist who wants to come to America, you have to be vetted for years. But if you're some gangbanger drug dealer who just hops the fence at the border, you're welcome. And we'll fly you anywhere you want in America. Now, that's just bone deep, down to the marrow, stupid. And I'm all for helping people with drug addiction. But we've the way to deal with it, number one, is just to secure the border. Will it completely solve the problem? No, but it'll do a lot more than safe crack pipes. And can I make one more point? Mm-hmm. This is part of the problem. President Biden talks about all the time about he cares about the little guy or the little gal, but he just doesn't seem to worry that much about ordinary Americans unless they're part of some minority group that he deems worthy. In this case, crack addicts and crack dealers and meth addicts and meth dealers. He has no sense of priority about what the American people are worried about when they lie down at night to sleep and they can't. Well,
with regard to the border, you're exactly right, sir. Senator, thank you for your
time. Thank you.
Senator Kennedy from Louisiana.
I'm actually surprised he didn't ding Hunter Biden. This would have been a real opportunity to go after Joe's son, who himself has struggled with drug addiction. That was kind of like a lot of self-restraint on the part of Senator Kennedy, the great distinguished statesman of Louisiana. I was a little disappointed.
He also twice talked about Americans not being able to sleep at night.
Yeah.
He said just the start of that is, I mean, again, is he having a hard time sleeping?
I'm assuming yes. His Ambien prescription needs refilling or something. Yeah. Also, I like the way he goes. He keeps rocking it in the free world, which is a Neil Young song. Keep on rocking the free world, but that's not, I don't think, supposed to be a negative thing.
Yeah, he must really love that song or something, and he's
appropriating
it for his Reaganite drug war crusade.
Right. Which, ironically, maybe he's one of those idiots who doesn't get that Neil Young, all back to your Canadian fellow citizen Neil Young, that song mentions George Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, but critically. Maybe he thinks rocking the free world then, since he doesn't get the moral code of that song, he then thinks rocking the free world, well, maybe rocking the free world is bad. But it certainly isn't bad. Is rocking the free world being Bushian?
No, it's not. No.
It's not.
No, I don't think so. No.
We'll have to do it.
It's kind of like how Reagan used to play Born in the USA.
Right, of course. Right. Yeah.
At his campaign rallies, not realizing that actually it was a protest song.
Right. Anti-war, anti-American imperialism song. Yeah.
Yeah. These guys are not culturally too.
Yeah, they're not the most culturally literate
too with
people.
It.
Yeah. Anyway, I like that. He keeps rocking in the free world. I think that's a great thing to say. Well, every time that Biden does something we don't like, we should say that. Let's go to, isn't that weird? What do you got?
So for isn't that weird, Russia is being accused of all kinds of nefarious things right now. You know, false flags in Ukraine, a coup in Ukraine, all these things. But did you know that the Putin administration is also involved in zoo subterfuge? Interfering with local zoos inside Russia.
Not surprised.
Yeah. Well, this is from the Mirror, the UK. Always got to be careful about stuff you read in the Mirror, by the way. But they say that the Putin administration tries to rig vote for zoo mascot after rivals back orangutan. In a bizarre series of events, Putin's administration reportedly tried to rig a vote for a zoo mascot after allies of his opponent Navalny backed Batu the orangutan for the top spot. Vladimir Putin's administration has made a strange attempt to rig a vote for a zoo mascot to prevent a rival-backed orangutan from winning, it was reported. Novosibirsk Zoo in Russia's third largest city announced a public vote to select its mascot after the area was named the country's New Year capital this year. In the poll, the city was given the choice between Aisha the cat, Batu the orangutan, Max the Amur tiger, Cyan the snow leopard, and Shilka the polar bear cub. But what started as an innocent vote quickly turned into a political battle that the Kremlin itself waded into. Sergei Boyko, the now exiled former coordinator for jailed Putin opposition Alexei Navalny, threw his backing behind Batu, the resident orangutan, to be chosen for the job. In a YouTube broadcast last month, he said, "Against the backdrop of everything going on in Novosibirsk, I think that the orangutan is absolutely the best option. Therefore, I urge you to support the orangutan." The surprise addition to the ballot quickly garnered more and more support as a number of Navalny supporters online, as well as other journalists and bloggers, rallied behind him. However, independent city council member Igor Ukrentsev also came out in support of the orangutan. Popular blogger Ilya Varlamov even dubbed the orange ape the candidate of the people. However, as Batu's popularity skyrocketed, local media Taiga.info claimed that Putin's administration took an interest in the vote. They report that the Kremlin and Putin wanted the orangutan to lose and claimed that Putin's Siberian representative sent an urgent request to the mayor's office to try and stop Batu winning. After this, Shilka the polar bear, the polar club, edged into the lead. Then Cyan the snow leopard suddenly received 25,000 votes in only 4 hours, despite the polling website receiving only 1,851 unique visitors. According to the insider, these votes were fraudulent. Wow.
Something suspicious. What I don't understand is what's wrong with the orangutan? Why doesn't Putin want the orangutan to win?
The orangutan must historically represent, you know, freedom, democracy, liberal values, Ukrainian independence and signing austerity-ridden free trade deals with the West. Maybe that's what it is.
It's very interesting. But this political intrigue has caused the zoo to shut down the vote. So it's a sad day for democracy.
Putin wins again.
Yeah. Batu had 39.4% of the vote, meaning he won, but it's unknown whether it will be selected. Well, I think we can use his preferred pronouns. And the zoo is very upset. They said, "We hope for sincere interest and positive attitude towards our idea. Unfortunately, today we see that our animals have become participants in a farce that people have organized."
Whatever happens in Ukraine, you know, there's all this talk about if Putin invades, does the U.S. sanction? Regardless, sanction him for this.
Sanction him for this, yeah.
Yeah. This is vote rigging. This is interfering in democracy.
For this election interference, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel bad for the zoo. They're very upset about it.
They're caught in the middle.
They're caught in the middle. Yeah. Thanks to everyone who took part in the survey without any ulterior motives. Max, Shilka, and Aisha, Batu, and Cyan are always waiting for you. Of course they are animals, but to make them an instrument of their ambitions, in our opinion, is wrong. Those are fighting words.
They are.
Who do you think the cutest is? We see adorable Shilka, the polar bear cub, right? That's pretty cute. You see her paw. Her paw's in an orange cone.
What? It's tough to top that cuteness-wise.
And then let's see Batu. If we scroll left, that's pretty cute.
Mm-hmm.
There's a snow lion.
Mm.
Very fierce looking.
Yeah. By default, I don't believe anything really in Western media about Russia. I think it's a safe bet that's probably false. But regardless, it's a very entertaining story.
It is an entertaining story.
It could be a false flag. Yeah.
I think Batu is a crisis actor. Could be.
All right. What do you have for Isn't That Terrible?
Okay. So for Isn't That Terrible, we have a very important story, very disturbing story. Mooks attacks Idit Tarod's sled team, injures four dogs. Okay, this wasn't what I was planning for, but these dogs and myself have trained for so long and so hard for this race. When I walk back to my dog yard and I have 12 perfectly healthy dogs out of the 16 and they look at me and all they want to do is run, how can I tell them no? She told the Associated Press on Tuesday, that would be selfish of me. These are freaking amazing athletes that just survived probably the most traumatic experience of any dog team ever in history, and they're survivors and they're still pushing through. Watkins said that the attack happened while she was on a 52-mile training run for the 1,000-mile Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race, which starts March 5th in Anchorage. As he charged me, I emptied my gun into him, and he never stopped. I ran for my life and prayed I was fast enough to not be killed in that moment. He trampled the team and then turned for us. Watkins said she and a friend who was trailing her on a snowmobile took refuge next to the snowmobile. The moose stopped its charge towards them 2 feet from the snowmobile, and she managed to cut free 6 dogs that were tied to the machine. But the moose went back to her sled and began stomping the dogs that were still tethered to it, standing over the dogs and trampling them repeatedly for over an hour. I've never felt so helpless in my life, Watkins wrote. He could not leave us alone, and he even stood over top of the team, refusing to retreat. She called friends, and the moose was shot and killed after one arrived with a rifle. Alaska State troopers had been preparing a helicopter to respond, but stopped doing so after they were told the moose was dead. Her 4 injured dogs were taken to a veterinarian in the nearby community of North Pole and are recovering. And she does feel bad. She feels bad that she killed the moose. But, I mean, I would do that in a heartbeat. Must have been scary when she shot the moose and it didn't stop it. Can we zoom in on the photo? It's really awful. How the hell did it last an hour? I would have been hysterical. I think all the dogs are on. I hope that last dog that was fighting for its life makes it. But if you see this image, it's really disturbing. You just see these poor little dogs in some kind of sled configuration and a moose just standing on top of them.
Terrible.
It's really terrible.
And a moose, that's a lot of weight.
Yeah, it's a lot of weight.
That's a big animal.
I mean, isn't that terrible? But in a way, isn't that a miracle that they didn't die?
It is. It is. Well, credit to those dogs. I guess they're tough. they can do these long sledding races. I mean, they must have built up some fortitude. Prayers for those dogs. Hope they're okay.
Prayers for those dogs, yeah. So those are our 4 basic food groups. I feel like we learned a lot. We are so excited to bring into this conversation the inimitable Margaret Kimberly, executive editor and senior columnist at Black Agenda Report and the author of Presidential, Black America and the Presidents. And follow her on Twitter at Freedom Ride Blog. So excited to have Margaret Kimberly on. We've been wanting to have you on for a while. In fact, I've been a little trigger happy. I keep thinking we have Margaret on when we don't, a little behind the scenes, but we finally made it happen. And there's so much we could ask you about. Honestly, I think I have so many questions for you, but maybe we could start with a recent statement that was released by the Black Alliance for Peace, which you're part of, condemning the America Competes Act. And I thought you could talk about what Black Alliance for Peace is, what the America Competes Act is, and why you guys spoke out against it.
Sure. Black Alliance for Peace, we are a 5-year-old organization, and I think our name tells you what we do. We are committed to raising up the Black radical peace tradition. We are an anti-imperialist formation, anti-capitalist formation, and we've grown pretty quickly. We have several hundred members. I'm on the coordinating committee, and blackalliancefor.peace.com, so people can check out our statements. Our largest campaign is devoted to several things: getting rid of AFRICOM, that's the U.S. Africa Command, which puts the U.S. military in charge, de facto in charge of the militaries of many African countries. Cutting the defense budget, ending the 1033 program, which brings the surplus defense equipment to police departments across the country. So those are our major campaigns. And we have, if you go to our website, you can see our statements on any and all foreign policy issues. The latest statement is about this ridiculous America Competes Act, which is supposed to contain China. I don't know, these people want to contain China, contain Russia. It's all ridiculous and dangerous. But at any rate, the House passed this bill, which is supposed to help America compete against China. And I think it's very funny, if China is so terrible, why is there this perception that we're behind them? So on the one hand, China is scorned and condemned all the time. It's terrible and awful. Then at the same time, oh, we have to do something because the Chinese are ahead of us. One little factoid that sticks in my mind, China has 20,000 miles of high-speed rail. The US has 0 miles of high-speed rail. So when I hear people say they're stealing our technology, I'm like, I doubt that. I don't think we have anything right. They need to steal. So anyway, this is millions of dollars. It's a giveaway to corporations, and it's using our money. And you know, when it comes to public money, there's never money for us. So Build Back Better is too expensive. There has to be a means test for the child tax credit. But when it comes to anybody else, the military industrial complex, private industry, suddenly there's millions of dollars for them. So this is both an attack on China. It's a theft of our resources. And it's a commitment to doing something which is fundamentally wrong and wrong-headed. So it is something that we would oppose.
My favorite part about these measures aimed at stopping China's economic growth is that the U.S. claims to be the lover of free markets and, you know, hater of
yes.
governments who interfere in the economy. The communists are the ones who have the planned economy. They're constantly mm-hmm. intervening in their economy. And we're supposed to hate mm-hmm. that. But right. yet the U.S. talks about loving the free market while constantly trying to undermine the free market by imposing sanctions and all these measures aimed to stop other people's economic growth like China.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, absolutely. It's, you know, it's a free market for us. It's a free for all, you know, race to the bottom for the average person. But it's government support for the banks, for military industrial complex, for all manner of corporate interests. And it's very, it's so hypocritical. But as I was saying before, I wish that there were more people who would study what China has done, just dispassionately, just objectively. How has this country come so far so quickly? What could we possibly learn from them? But if you're convinced that the U.S. is superior, if you believe in American exceptionalism, then all you can do is tell lies about other countries, about other systems when they prosper and when they take care of their people. And I think that's the other reason that China is under attack. It's an example, and it's an example of what this country could do for its people. But so if China weren't condemned and people were allowed to examine their system for themselves, they might start complaining about what they have here. So I think that is always behind, it's part of what's behind these attacks on other countries.
That's very succinct, very well put. And wanted to ask you, speaking of foreign policy, about your, on a related note, your travel to Nicaragua. What brought you there? What capacity you were in when you went there?
Yeah, I've been discovered. I discovered I need to leave New York and go someplace warmer in the wintertime. Yeah. But aside from that very obvious fact, I went as part of a delegation with Black Alliance for Peace. I went in November. During the presidential election, the government invited solidarity groups to come as companions. They didn't say election observers because that status can be used by the United States. They did that in Bolivia. They, you know, planted these observers, quote unquote, who then said the election was fraudulent. So they use the term companion, acompañantes in Spanish. And a couple hundred Americans and Canadians went there. And what I observed is everything we were told about Nicaragua is untrue. The election was very open. The opposition candidates were campaigning freely. You saw their campaign signs more than you saw President Ortega's. The ballot was very easy to understand. There were six or seven presidential candidates with their photos on them. There was no one was obstructed in their ability to vote. We're told that Ortega jailed other presidential candidates. None of those people were presidential candidates. People were imprisoned under Nicaragua's law, people who helped in a 2018 coup attempt, who were given amnesty, who were required not to take money from foreign governments, who were required to reveal sources of funding, and they did not. And some of them are in jail. But none of them were presidential candidates. They're called that so the U.S. can attack the government. And again, it's an example. This little country, 6.5 million people. There are more people in New York City than there are in all of Nicaragua. But they provide free health care for their people. It is a revolutionary government. And so that people don't say to themselves, well, maybe we could do something different, then that country has to be attacked. But I think it's a sign of weakness of the U.S. empire that every effort to break free from U.S. control has to be hit with a hammer. And they passed the Rey Nacer Act, which is really disgusting because Rey Nacer means rebirth in Spanish. Yeah. So they called this terrible act to sanction the country the Rebirth Act. And including progressives, oh, there were only like 30 members of the House who voted against it. To sanction Nicaragua and to punish them and to punish their people for daring to do something different, something that works in their interest. Of course, immediately after these sanctions were applied, Nicaragua establishes relations with China and immediately is now part of the Belt and Road Initiative. So it didn't even make sense from a strategic perspective if the goal is to keep a country in the American orbit, America's front yard, as Biden said. So it was very interesting to see another system, to see people struggling to have a different system, a different form of government. And plus, it's a beautiful country. I saw a sloth. That was very exciting.
Oh, was it cute?
Yes, it was. And they're very slow. It's true.
Yeah.
Hence the name. But anyway.
And yet, Margaret, you know, when you look at the progressive media political space in the U.S., mm-hmm. you talked about the progressives in Congress who either supported this mm-hmm. these new sanctions or did mm-hmm. nothing to mm-hmm. oppose it. I mean, the Nicaraguan government is very demonized, and the mm-hmm. issue is even split people on the left who once supported Nicaragua when they resisted the dirty war, the Contra war that Reagan unleashed through the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, I agree with your position on this, so we're on the same side here. And I'm just wondering what insight you gained about the power of the U.S. propaganda system, just going to Nicaragua and seeing for yourself, comparing the reality on the ground with how it's widely portrayed here, including by some people on the left?
Well, I think we're learning who's really on the left. Frankly, that's what we find out when these attacks take place. You know, if you scratch the surface, you find out a lot of these people are just liberals. And they believe in American exceptionalism. They really do. They might deny it. But you see, when the United States attacks a country in that way, that they don't say, and I take the position that you don't have to support everything another country does. So nobody has to, everything I said about Nicaragua, I can prove to be true. But I also want to say that they don't have to be defended. What our job as USians is to oppose US interventions. That's our job. It's up to Nicaraguans to struggle amongst themselves to figure out the best way for their country to move forward. And when the US interferes with other countries, they find people within that nation to help them do their dirty work. They distort politics in Nicaragua. So the US presence, so who knows what Nicaraguan politics would be like absent the US. But when the US inserts itself and it becomes literally us versus them, a fight for survival, well, that impacts the politics there. So anybody who wants people around the world to have self-determination has to oppose the U.S. interfering in other countries. And people have the right to self-determination. They have the right to vote for the governments they want. So it's not up to some liberal in New York to decide what kind of government Nicaragua ought to have, or to have some critique of President Ortega. I might have some critique of President Ortega, but my primary critique is of this country, which uses its economic power, which uses its military power to keep people all over the world from determining their own future. And that is what I want these people to understand. And I also want them to stop calling themselves leftists. I really do, because that's not what they are.
You know, from a hegemonic point of view, I saw this in Syria too. These sanctions, economic warfare, they work so perfectly because you can really help destroy a country and achieve the aims of a war without sending a single soldier or firing a single shot when you cut off the economy. That's the point of these sanctions. And often in the US, the way sanctions are discussed is, does it work or not? Or have these sanctions failed? That's how it's talked about when it comes to Cuba, Syria, anywhere that is under US economic warfare. But the point is, that's the wrong question, because if sanctions are making people suffer, then they have worked. Because that is the aim of economic warfare. It's not to bring democracy and freedom. It's to make people so miserable that they turn against their government. And it's amazing that Nicaragua, for all that it's been subjected to going back four decades, you know, and actually before that, when the US propped up this horrible dictatorship, and then when they were overthrown, the Sandinistas came in, tried to implement some, you know, modest reforms, helping to spread the resources, they were subjected to, you know, one of the worst terror wars in recent memory, with the Contra war under Reagan. And since then, the same aims are achieved, not by flooding the country with weapons, but just through trying to destroy their economy.
Yeah. And when people ask if sanctions work, it's the assumption behind that question is that the U.S. has the right to sanction other countries, and that the U.S. has the right to decide who runs Nicaragua or Iran or Cuba or any of the other countries that are being punished in this way. I think most people don't know what sanctions do. I think most people think it, you know, you can't have a bank account in Cuba or something like that. I don't think they realize that these countries cannot access international markets. They can't. So people will say, you know, Havana looks run down. Well, if you can't import hammers and nails and paint, well, I guess it would. But sanctions do kill. They kill people. So people can't get medicines they need. Venezuela used to have a program, and they would send people abroad for bone marrow transplants, and they can't do it anymore. So those people die. Just basic medicines people can't get. So I wish that people really knew what sanctions do. I think that question would be asked less often. But I also, but I go back to my other point about how the U.S. doesn't have the right to dictate to other countries. And we in this country must speak out against these efforts. And sanctions destroy a country. So Syria, to your point, so Syrians, so if a Syrian has a relative in the U.S. who wants to send them money, they can't get the money. So of course they want to leave. So you have this horrible refugee crisis going on, all caused by Barack Obama. I always want to add that. And so people want to leave Cuba. And then they'll say, see, people want to leave Cuba. Well, you've made their lives miserable. Of course they want to leave Cuba. What, you know, what does that prove? So I wish that people would stop believing in their own, in this country's propaganda. The other assumption about sanctions working, there's this assumption that what the US does is a good and positive thing. And that's just not true.
Shifting gears a little bit from the international to the domestic, you have some really great recent pieces at the Black Agenda Report. One is called, one is about the Black political class. Another one is about Eric Adams, Black on Black Crime. Can you, which is about the treatment of Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg. Can you talk about how this is Black on Black Crime, why you decided to call that your piece that?
I was hoping for an eye-catching title, but just to give everyone an idea, we have a new mayor in New York. We have our second Black mayor, Eric Adams, who's a real piece of work. He campaigned on, I'm going to say, law and order as a, you know, just a not terribly exact description, but he's campaigned on fighting crime, getting guns off the street, bringing back stop and frisk, which, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in New York, most of them Black, were terrorized by the police, bringing back these plain clothes police units that killed Amadou Diallo, that killed Sean Bell, all these things that Black people don't want. He has brought back, and he has his police commissioner is also Black. Her name is Sewell. And but Manhattan's district attorney, his name is Alvin Bragg, and he campaigned the district attorney. That's an elected office. He campaigned on sending fewer people to jail who come through the criminal justice system. And he wrote a very reasonable memo to his staff saying, we're not going to ask for jail time for turnstile jumping, for sex work, for misdemeanors. Most controversially, he said, we are not going to ask for jail time for resisting arrest. Now, why is that important? Because resisting arrest is the phoniest charge in the United States. The police use it all the time to shut people up, to send people to jail, to cover up their own brutality. And he said that they would not ask for jail time for resisting arrest unless it was for a felony that was being committed. This was all very reasonable stuff. Well, Adams and his police commissioner immediately undercut him. She sent an email to every NYPD officer saying she was concerned and they were less safe. And unfortunately for Bragg, two cops were shot and killed a few weeks ago. But nothing he proposed would have kept them from being shot. Right. He didn't say that, you know, I'm not going to prosecute murder or sexual assault. It was all very, very reasonable. But they, I called it a mugging in broad daylight, hence the black on black crime. But everyone defended Adams, the press, the politicians. Nobody spoke up for Bragg, who, as I said, is an elected official who did what he campaigned on, and people in Manhattan voted for him. But without a movement to provide any pushback to this imperative to keep Black people locked up, every time someone proposes anything that means less jail time, we're immediately told that our lives are in danger and the criminals are going to, you know, overrun the society, all kinds of lies and smears to keep the system the way it is. So that was my effort to speak up on behalf of true justice and to speak up on behalf of what people, especially Black people, really want.
Anything else that you want to make sure to mention from, I mean, there's so many great tidbits in this.
I know. Just buy my book. You can still buy it. It's, from Steerforth Press. You can get it on Amazon. It's also an audiobook narrated by me, which was great fun to do. Read blackagendareport.com every week, every Wednesday. Today's Black Agenda Report Day. And check out blackallianceforpeace.com. Awesome. And watch out for Ukraine.
Yeah. And to hear the rest of the interview, please go to usefulidiots.substack.com. That was great.
Margaret's awesome.
She's awesome.
I always love talking to her.
Yeah, she's very brutal and funny on Twitter. Everyone should follow her on Twitter. She's very funny.
I second that. She's a great follow.
Yeah, she's a great follow. Yeah.
And a great, and her column is every week, every Wednesday, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, they're great.
She covers local stuff, you know, like in New York, but also foreign policy too. And Black Agenda Report, I just can't say enough good things about it. It's such a great set.
I'm jealous that you got to meet Glenn Ford.
Yeah, I got to meet him many times, and he was, you know, he was tough. Like he had a sharp eye, and he could recognize weakness, like political weakness. But he was also very nice, very funny. I know he mentored several young people, and who got to learn from him. And he was just a genius. He just was really politically, really, really sharp, and a great writer. I really admire him a lot, and his memory is, you know, he's left a legacy, and I can't wait for his book to come out from OR Books later this year. Maybe we can do something about that around that when it comes out.
Yeah.
Because he's a very important voice in this country.
Well, we will see you guys next week. Make sure that you rate and review us on iTunes so we beat the Lincoln Project, Positive America. Make sure you, subscribe to our Substack. You'll have a great chat with Aaron Mate about going on Tucker Carlson. You won't want to miss that. Also, you'll see a great little appearance of Aaron Mate as a child thespian, which you won't want to miss.
Well, this, course, is found next, this is found footage from the vault.
Footage, yeah, this that we just unearthed
that you will not want to miss.
Breaking news. And also the extended interview with Margaret Kimberly, which gets very spicy.
And you can subscribe at usefulidiots.substack.com.
Hello, thank you so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For full episodes and extended interviews, please subscribe at usefulidiots.substack.com. You can subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/usefulidiots for clips, live streams, and full episodes. Also, subscribe to us wherever you find your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at usefulidiotpod and use the hashtag usefulidiotspod. Join us Mondays at 10 a.m. for the Useful Idiots Monday Morning Show, where we discuss the Sunday morning news shows so you don't have to watch them.
The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.